Thanks for listening to Tuned to Yesterday's Encore broadcasts. Do you enjoy the historical aspect of these old shows? Would you like to hear more in-depth tales of the performers and players that made the golden age of radio what it was? We have a weekly podcast dedicated to this called the Tuned to Yesterday Dialer, or TTY Dialer for short. It brings you stories of how radio was, along with fun with sound from radio's past, and a brief preview of the shows coming up for the week. The podcasts are about 20 minutes long, and they're posted Saturday nights and make for great listening on Sundays or whenever you want. It's the TTY Dialer podcast at WRVO.org, or listen as part of your subscription to Tuned to Yesterday on iTunes. Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, for an hour of sci-fi. Coming up later this hour, a story from Ray Bradbury on X-1 from the Martian Chronicles. Right now, it's The Mysterious Traveler, with Robert A. Arthur's story, The Planet Xevious, from May 1st, 1951, on the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler. Written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Copeland, and starring two of radio's foremost actors, Ralph Bell and Brett Morrison, in The Planet Xevious. This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as I retell a story which so many listeners have asked to hear again. It's the story I call The Planet Xevious. Our story begins in a large, darkened laboratory filled with intricate machinery and instruments. A half dozen engineers are seated before control panels which run the length of the laboratory, while two small, slender men stand in the middle of the room looking up at a large screen. A screen which reveals the celestial heavens to them. The two men follow closely, anxiously, the movement of a pinpoint light across the screen.
Signal coming in much stronger, Commander.
Yes. The ship is approaching the stratosphere. I think that this time we've succeeded.
Yes, sir, if it all goes well in the landing.
Yes, we waited so long for success.
Pay close attention to the controls, men. The IPX-4 will soon enter the stratosphere. Prepare to land it.
Pardon me. Commander Destro?
Yes, yes, what is it?
My name is Bedray. I've been assigned by the Scientific Council to act as historian for the work you're engaged in.
I see. Well, you come at a most momentous time, Bedray. If you look at the screen above us, you'll see history in the making. Oh, allow me to introduce Professor Capaccio, our chief scientist. How do you do, sir?
I'm happy to meet you. You were saying, Commander, that history was being made this very moment?
Yes. You see that small pinpoint of light on the tetra screen?
Pinpoint of light? Oh, yes, I see it.
That is the IPX-4, Interplanet Experimental Ship Number 4.
This year will go down in history as an epoch-making year.
You mean that you've actually succeeded?
Excuse me. The IPX-4 has entered the stratosphere. Attention, Master Control. Prepare to land the IPX-4. Switch on retarding jet number 1.
Switch on retarding jet number 1.
Switch on retarding jet number 2.
Switch on retarding jet number 2.
Instrument reading.
Speed, 1,200 miles per hour. Altitude, 60,000 feet. 900, 40,000. 700, 30,000. 500, 20,000. 300, 10,000. Speed, 100 miles per hour. Altitude, 2,000 feet.
Signal base crew to stand by.
Base crew signal to stand by.
Instrument reading.
Hovering, 500 feet. 300. 100. Flight completed.
The IPX-4 has landed, gentlemen. And with it, a new era has begun. An era in which we shall travel through the entire solar system to other planets.
You finally succeeded.
Yes.
And the crew, they came through without any injuries or ill effects?
The entire flight was controlled by us from this laboratory. The only crew we had on that ship were animals.
The animals are alive and well. The flight vision screen aboard the ship permitted us to see and hear them every moment of the flight.
Now there remains but the final step.
A flight with human beings as the crew?
Yes. We shall start to prepare for it immediately.
Ready for flight, sir. The crew are at their stations.
Thank you. Professor, why don't you show our young friend through the ship while I have a last-minute conference with my officers?
Of course, Commander. Come along, Vidray. You'll be more than interested.
Well, thank you. I should like to see the rest of the ship.
And as you probably gather, this is the fuel room.
Mm-hmm.
Where on the deck below are the nuclear propulsion engine. Watch your head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, this is the crew's quarters. And beneath it are storage quarters for ship supplies and equipment.
Strange, Professor, but from the outside, the IPX-4 seems so much larger than from in here.
Well, that's easy enough to explain, Vidray. You'll see the IPX-4 is a hull within a hull, and this is the inner hull.
Oh, I see. And it's the outer hull that protects us.
Yes. To break through the field of gravitation of this planet, we must achieve a speed of 20,000 miles per hour. At that speed, friction creates great heat on the outer hull, heat which we, fortunately, won't feel in this hull.
I understand. Is this the control room?
Yes. And don't be overawed by these hundreds of controls and instruments. In time, you'll come to understand them all.
That large screen, is that the eye of the ship?
Yes. Once we're in flight, what lies before us is projected on the screen.
Stand by, Zal, for flight orders.
Yes, sir. Stand by for flight orders.
Well, gentlemen, the moment has arrived. Sound warning signal.
Sound warning signal.
Switch on flight vision screen.
Switch on flight vision screen.
Establish contact with base.
Establish contact with base.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
Cut in nuclear jet number one.
We're taking off, Edre.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
Cut in nuclear jet number two.
Instrument reading.
Rate of flight, 500 miles per hour. Altitude, 1,000 feet. Rate of flight, 2,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 150,000 feet.
Don't worry if you start to black out, DJ. It's to be expected. The crew is conditioned for it.
Rate of flight, 5,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 140,000 feet. Rate of flight, 10,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 300,000 feet.
This is a crucial moment, DJ.
Rate of flight, 11,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 500,000 feet. Rate of flight, 13,000 miles per hour. Altitude, 700,000 feet.
Hear that, sir, Professor.
It's broken through.
We're in space.
Yes.
Rate of flight, 24,000 miles per hour. Flight distance covered, 2,000 miles.
We've made it, Professor. With each minute of flight, our speed accelerates.
Yes. We should soon reach our maximum speed of 50,000 miles per hour.
Rate of flight, 30,000 miles per hour. Flight distance covered, 3,000 miles.
Take over, Zal.
Yes, sir.
What's the matter with Vidray? Did you black out?
Yes, he wasn't conditioned for the flight.
Oh, he'll be all right in a few minutes. When he is, bring him into the chart room. I'll be plotting our course. Vidray, Professor. How do you feel, Vidray?
I'm all right now, sir.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
I've just been plotting our course to the planet Xevious.
Xevious, sir? Why Xevious?
It isn't the nearest planet.
Well, that's quite true, Vibray. But through the use of a spectrometer, we've been able to determine that Phoebus can support human life. The composition of the air on that planet isn't much different from our own. The air of our planet contains 22.8% oxygen and 77% nitrogen, and traces of other gases.
And Phoebus?
On Phoebus, the oxygen content is 20.5%, a little less than our own. The nitrogen content is 79%. So we shouldn't have too much difficulty breathing on Phoebus.
I'm afraid I'm not too familiar with Phoebus. How does it compare with our planet in other respects?
Well, three-fourths of Xevia seems to be water. The land is divided into two continents.
Very much like our own planet.
Yes. The circumference is approximately 28,000 miles.
300 years ago, our astronomers noted huge explosions on Xevia. For a time, they thought it was disintegrating. But it didn't.
Yes. And since those huge explosions 300 years ago, there have been no additional ones.
Professor, do you think there might be human life on Xevious?
It's quite possible, Vidray.
We should reach Xevious in 60 days. Perhaps then, Vidray, we shall have the answer. Stand by to land on Xevious.
Attention, crew members. Stand by to land on Xevious.
We're approaching Xevious already. It's exerting a strong pull toward its surface.
Yes.
Switch on radar sender.
Switch on radar sender.
Our radar signals are reaching Xevious and being reflected back off its surface. As we get closer, the speed of the signals will accelerate.
I see.
Cut nuclear jet number two.
Cut nuclear jet number two.
Cut nuclear jet number one.
Cut nuclear jet number one.
How quiet it is. Seems strange not to hear the engines after 61 days.
Instrument reading.
Rate of descent, 500 miles per hour. Approaching stratosphere. Altitude, 400,000 feet. Rate of descent, 600 miles. Altitude, 300,000 feet.
Our speed is increasing.
Why?
We're in Xevious orbit. Gravity is pulling us down toward it.
Switch on retarding jet number one.
Switch on retarding jet number one.
Instrument reading.
Rate of descent, 400 miles per hour. Altitude, 200,000 feet.
Professor, look. You can clearly make out Xevious' surface now.
300 miles.
Yes.
Altitude,
yes, we're near the coast of one of the continents. That small silvery thread of the river flowing into the sea.
100 miles per hour.
How green it is.
Altitude.
Xevious has plant life, just like our own planet.
Yes. That river's quite a large one. Far larger than any we have.
Range.
Only 50,000 feet.
Commander's evidently going to land near that mountain overlooking the river.
It's rather hilly country.
Yes.
800.
Too bad darkness is falling.
600. 400. 200. 100. Flight completed.
We've landed.
Cut retarding jet number one.
Cut retarding jet number one.
Cut radar sender.
Cut radar sender.
Well, gentlemen, we've done it. Flown 80 million miles from our own planet to Xevious.
Congratulations, Commander.
Thank you. Well, it's already grown dark. We'll wait until morning before leaving the ship. Meanwhile, Professor, I suggest you make extensive tests of the air on Xevious. We can't be too careful.
I quite agree. I'll proceed at once, Commander. You'll have a full report by morning.
Good morning, Professor. Vidray.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Well, I've made a thorough analysis of the air, Commander, and it substantiates our earlier findings.
In other words, we can live out there.
Yes. Well, we may find ourselves a little short of breath now and then due to less oxygen than we're used to. It's perfectly safe.
Good. I'll give orders to have the nuclear copter assembled for flight. The three of us will make an exploratory trip over this area. Be prepared to leave in exactly 1 hour. We're ready for takeoff. I suggest you fasten your safety belts, gentlemen.
Of course.
I'm ready.
Stand clear.
We'll rise straight up and have a look around.
Look, we're high enough now to see the river. It's enormous.
Yes. I should estimate it to be at least, a mile in width. Seems to flow into that bay and then out to sea.
Professor, look. To your left, across the river.
Well, what are you pointing to? All I see are trees and greenery.
Well, wait till we rise a little higher. Yes. That greenery is growing on top of immense ruins. You see them, don't you, Commander?
Yes. Yes, I think you're right, Vidray. Apparently it's an island. Yes, it is. Let's fly over and have a look.
The island itself doesn't seem to be very large. Oh, yes, yes, I see the ruins now. And they're barely discernible under the growth of trees and grass that covers them.
Where are you going to land, Commander?
We'll put down on that huge ruin directly ahead. From it, we'll have a good view of the entire island.
These ruins are truly amazing, Commander. Thousands and thousands of buildings and dwellings covered by trees and grass. These are the ruins of a great civilization.
How old would you estimate these ruins to be, Professor?
From a rather hasty study of the plant life that's grown over it, I should say approximately, 300 years.
300 years. Do you think those huge explosions our astronomers saw on this planet 300 years ago might have wiped out this civilization?
That's quite possible, Commander. Where's Vidray gotten to? Oh, there he is. Oh, Vidray! Don't get too near the edge. You may fall over.
I'm being quite careful, Professor. I just wanted to see what was below us.
This ruin we're standing on must have been a huge building leveled by some great force. If you look over the edge, you'll see that it slopes down to what seems to be streets.
Streets?
Yes, very much like those on our own planet. It would be quite possible for us to make our way down the side of this ruin to the bottom. Can't be more than 200 feet.
What do you think, Professor?
Why not? By all means, let's descend and have a look around.
Well, we only have a few more feet. Watch your footing here. These rocks keep giving way beneath me.
Yes. It should be quite easy to break a leg here. You all right, Professor?
Yes, Commander.
Well, here we are. Oh, it seems as though we've descended 1,000 feet instead of only 200.
Yes. It's rather dark down here. Everything's in shadows.
Yes, you are quite right, Vidray. Beneath this rubble we're standing on, there seems to be a paved street.
Let's have a look around, shall we?
Look at those ruins. They seem to have been huge buildings.
Yes, if I'm any judge, they must have been 7, 8, perhaps 1,000 feet high.
Apparently, this civilization was almost as highly developed as ours before it was destroyed.
Yes.
Professor, do you think it's possible that there may be descendants of the people who built this civilization?
It's possible, of course, but as yet I've seen no signs of them.
Look, there's a building which hasn't been entirely destroyed. Let's have a look inside.
Yes, by all means. Perhaps we'll discover objects that will give us more information about the race that once lived here.
How huge that entrance is.
It looks quite dark in there.
Unfortunately, I have a small torch. Come along.
Look at the size of this chamber. Why, the ceiling is at least 40 feet high.
Professor, this building must have been an institution, a library. Look at the thousands of books lying on the floor, simply rotting away.
Yes, yes, you're right.
Look at this book, Professor. It's about twice the size of our own.
Yes. It's too bad it's been exposed to the elements. Pages are yellow. The printing is all but faded.
Here's another one on the floor. It's a much larger book. And bound in some sort of animal skin.
Yeah, let me see it. Yes. Yes, this is in much better condition. We shall take it back to the ship, Vidray. See if one of our scientists can decipher the language it's printed in.
Professor, would you come here for a minute?
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
Look. These ashes on the floor. Looks like the remains of a fire.
Yes. Yes, you're right. It appears to be only a few weeks old.
A few weeks old?
Then that means...
Yes. There were survivors of the Holocaust that destroyed this civilization.
Their descendants may be here, in these ruins, watching us.
That's quite possible. However, we're armed.
I wonder what they look like.
Perhaps after a time, when they get used to the sight of us, they'll show themselves.
Yes.
What was that?
Sounds like a signal of some sort.
Yes, you're right. I suggest we leave, Commander.
Yes, come along.
It feels good to get out of that dark chamber. There it is again. Only much closer.
There's no need to get alarmed, Vidran.
We only knew what they looked like.
I dare say we frightened them as much as they do us.
I think we're being followed. I saw a huge figure back there flipping from one ruin to another.
Oh, nonsense, Vidran. It's your imagining. Yes. I think you're right. For a moment, I caught a glimpse of someone behind us, too.
Well, we're almost at the foot of the ruin which we descended. We haven't much further to go.
Perhaps we ought to fire our weapons as a warning.
No. They'd surely take it as a threatening gesture. We don't want to do that.
Yes, so here we are. Let's not waste any time climbing to the top.
Yes, they still seem to be following. Now and then I can make out a shadowy figure.
It's almost impossible to tell what they look like. They cling to the shadows.
They seem enormous. Much larger than ourselves.
Mustn't let your imagination run away with you.
It's amazing how much faster we're going up than when we came down. We're almost at the top.
I have a feeling they won't try to climb this ruin after us. Evidently, they don't like daylight. Here we are.
Professor, look out, Hunter!
Oh, it was close. What was it?
And he threw some sort of weapon at you. Why, it's nothing but a long, round pole with a sharp piece of metal on the end.
It's a spear. We have them in our museums. It's the weapon of a primitive tribe.
Then they must be little more than savages.
Yes. And I don't think they'll come after us, but I suggest we take off and return to the ship.
Yes, sir?
I don't expect any trouble, but turn on the radar system for protection. If anyone approaches the ship, the alarm will go off.
Yes, sir.
Why are you so fascinated by that spear, Vidre? You've been examining it for 10 minutes now.
Well, it's just that... Well, it's an enigma, Commander. We find the ruins of a great civilization. Huge buildings, dwelling streets. A city that must have had 4 or 5 million people. What happened to them?
We can only surmise, Vidre. Perhaps it was a violent quake, a gigantic tidal wave, or some other huge force that all but wiped them out.
And this spear, could it have been hurled by a descendant of that great race that built all that?
Yes, it's quite likely.
But look at this spear. The man who threw it was little more than a savage.
Perhaps the wheel of evolution has slowly turned to its starting point. It's difficult to say.
The alarm. Someone's broken through the radar system.
All crew members, attention. Report to station. Switch on radar screen.
Oh, it's too bad night has fallen. Screen reveals nothing but shadowy trees.
Yes.
What's that?
It sounds very much like spears bouncing off the hull.
Yes, we're being attacked. Well, those spears can certainly do us no harm.
Commander, look at the radar screen.
It's a huge figure. It's hard to make off. He's carrying a burning torch.
Yes.
Doc.
Yes, sir?
If that figure carrying that torch attempts to approach, fire on him with a ray beam.
Yes, sir.
Look, he's running towards us.
Yes, he's out to set the ship on fire.
Look how huge he is. He's simply gigantic.
Yes, sure is.
Doc, fire.
Yes, sir.
He's down. Only a few yards from the ship.
Yes. He doesn't seem to be dead. I can see him moving.
burst from a ray beam would have killed any of us. It only seems to have wounded him.
South.
Yes, sir?
Order a party of six men to go out and bring that monster in here.
Yes, sir, of course.
They're bringing him in now, Commander.
Yes.
Bring him over here, man. He's much too big for the bed. All right, lie him down on the floor.
Good. That's it.
He's dying. I'm afraid there's nothing we can do for him. He's trying to say something. If we only knew his language.
Professor.
He's dead.
Too bad. Sorry we had to fire on him. I was hoping we could establish friendly relations with the people of Xevious.
Look at the size of him. He's gigantic.
Even larger than I thought.
Yes.
You must measure at least here. Let me see.
Oh, Professor, the leather-bound book you found in the ruins. I've succeeded in deciphering the language. I've already translated the first two pages.
Be patient a moment, Leto. I want to finish my examination of this man of Xevious.
It's amazing.
Simply amazing.
This book you found is apparently the key to their civilization. As soon as I've translated the rest of it, I'm sure we'll have a...
This man of Xevious, I should say, he weighs at least 200 pounds. And as for his height, he's at least 6 feet 1.
6 feet 1?
Why, that would make him almost twice as tall as we are.
Yes. But that isn't all. He only has 5 fingers.
5 fingers? Are you sure?
Positive.
Please, sir, I wish you'd let me read you the translation of the book you found in the ruins.
Oh, yes, yes, Pedro. By all means, go ahead.
Well, I've translated only the first 2 pages. It begins this way. When God began to create the heavens and the earth was a desolate waste, with darkness covering the abyss, and a tempestuous wind raging over the surface of the water. It's evident, sir, that this planet we know as Xevious was called Earth by the race that wrote this book.
Earth. I wonder what happened to the people of Earth that brought their civilization to an end.
Did you enjoy our little visit to the planet Xevious, or better known to us as Earth? What's that, madam? You don't like the sort of civilization being destroyed? Well, fortunately, it doesn't have to happen. Not if we don't want it to. Oh, by the way, all names of characters in this story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons is strictly out of this world. And, oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
The Mysterious Traveler on Tuned To Yesterday from May 1st, 1951 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. The story penned by Robert A. Arthur, head writer for the series. It's an hour of science fiction on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now from the Martian Chronicles, Ray Bradbury's short story collection, we hear a tale from the period covering June 2001 to 2032 called And the Moon Be Still as Bright. This was first heard on NBC on September 22, 1955, with Clark Gordon, John Larkin, Richard Hamilton, and Nelson Olmsted.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4... Three, two, X minus one, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the Ray Bradbury story entitled, And the Moon Be Still as Bright.
The first three expeditions for Mars left Earth in a mushroom of flame, arced through the atmosphere, and finally dwindled to tiny specks in the big eye of the Mount Palomar telescope, and then were lost to sight forever. The prearranged landing signals flashed back to Earth, and then the radios went dead. One after the other, ships had disappeared and were never heard from again. But still, the rockets came. The fourth expedition emerged from the silent gulfs of space, angled down toward the floating red disk of Mars, down into an orbit as the order came to land. The last blast of the bow jets broke red against the blue desert sands, and the ship slid to a halt at the edge of a vast city that reflected the icy glare of the moonlight. For a while, all was still.
All right, Park, you. Open the airlock.
Hi, sir.
Fresh air.
Hey, it's cold out here.
Who cares? We got here. I thought I'd never hit solid ground again.
Hey, how about a fire, Captain Wildey? It's freezing.
Later. We have work to do.
Oh, smell that air. Well, you could get drunk on it. Say, there's an idea. Why don't we break out a bottle and celebrate?
Biggs, there will be no drinking done till we're secured.
But we're landed, Captain.
Three other expeditions landed and disappeared within 24 hours. Now, we're not relaxing security till we find out what happened to them.
What do you mean? Maybe Martians?
Sender, you're an archaeologist. How old would you say they are?
I can't tell till I study them more closely. It's the kind of engineering we couldn't duplicate on Earth.
Well, I'm not interested in the architecture now. I want to make sure there's nothing there that might be dangerous. Mr. Hathaway.
Yes, sir?
I want you and Spender to take a reconnaissance party into the city and find out what's there. We'll set up camp here. No man is to go more than 50 feet from this rocket. And there'll be no celebration till Hathaway and his party report back.
In the sea bottoms, the wind stirred along faint vapors, and from the mountains, great stone visages looked upon the silvery rocket and the small fire. The sky was black overhead, as the two racing moons threw knife-edged double shadows on the desert.
All right, come and get it. Ciao.
Hey, what do you got there, Jackie?
Soda smothered in cold chicken fat.
Good, I thought it was something I couldn't eat. Hey, Captain, Mr. Hathaway's back.
Oh, Captain Wilder.
Oh, yes, over here, Mr. Hathaway. Well?
Most of the city's dead. Spender says it's been dead a good many thousand years, but we found one part about a mile over
toward
the...
What about it?
People were living in it last week, sir.
People?
Martians.
Where are they now?
Dead. We found bodies, thousands of bodies. They hadn't been dead more than 10 days.
When did they die of?
You won't believe it.
What killed them?
Chicken pox.
Chicken pox?
Yes.
Where could they get chicken pox?
From Earth.
Oh, then the other rockets did get through.
Yes. I don't know what the Martians did to them, but I sure know what they did to the Martians. They gave them chicken pox and wiped them out. They just didn't have any resistance to an Earth disease.
Think of it, Captain. A race builds itself for a million years, refines itself, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty, and then it dies. Of what? It's like saying the Greeks died of mumps or the proud Roman Empire collapsed because of athlete's foot.
We didn't even give them a decent excuse for dying. We just gave them chicken pox.
Spender, get hold of yourself.
You didn't see those bodies, Captain.
Yes, I know. It must have been a shock. You need a rest, a little relaxation. The Martians are dead. There's nothing you can do about that now.
Hey, you hear that? The Martians are all dead. Come on, let's break out a bottle and hoop it up. Hey, hey, how about a case, hey?
Good Lord. They have to do that now? Isn't there time later to throw old beer cans into the canals?
Bender, you're an idealist. They're not. All they know now is that they're safe. A little shouting won't hurt. You think too much.
I was safe on Mars. The first Earthmen on Mars. We're going to celebrate. Yahoo!
Twenty bottles were opened and drunk. The voices got louder. The Earth laughs and shouts echoing across the empty Martian sands. Spender listened to the wind over his ears, cool and whispering. He felt the land getting cooler. The stars grew closer, very near. The air smelled clean and new. He looked at the cool ice of the white Martian buildings over there on the empty sea lands.
Oh, what a woman! Hey, what do we do with these empty bottles?
Save them, stupid. There's a 2 cents deposit.
Throw them away.
Hey, wait. How about that building? 2-1 on a buck. I can heave one right through that window.
You're wrong.
All right, here goes. Bullseye! Hey, double or nothing on the next shot.
Put that bottle down, Biggs.
Who's there, Mr. Spender?
Stop smashing those windows.
What's the difference? The planet's ours now. I guess I can do anything with it I want.
Drop that bottle or I'll knock your teeth out.
Yeah? Hey, just watch me.
I warned you, Big.
Hey, watch me. Hey, come on.
What's going on here? Spender!
I hit him.
He's crazy, Captain. He just walked up and slugged me.
All right, Biggs. Spender, you come with me. Now, suppose you explain. What was the idea?
The noise, the drunken brawl.
Friend of the men are tired. This has been a long trip. And you have a different way of seeing things.
No, I'm seeing things, all right. I'm seeing how we'll ruin Mars. We'll rip it up and rip the skin off the way we've already ruined Earth.
And is that why you hit Biggs?
Yes. I couldn't stand the idea of them watching us make fools of ourselves.
Them?
The Martians.
They're dead. They're all dead.
But they know we're here. Doesn't an old thing always know when a new thing comes? We've come a long way to smash their windows and spit in their wine.
Well, maybe you're right. But I'm still going to fine you $50 for that fight. Now, come on, Spender. Suck in your chin. We'll go back there and play happy.
Now they moved out into the moonlight across the desert. They made their way into the dreaming, dead city. The light of the racing twin moons glinted on the barrel of a pistol, the long blade of a machete, the round, gurgling shape of a raised bottle. The wind blew in from the dead sea bottom and brushed through the silvery wire filigree of the towers. Strange music drifted down to the double-shadowed streets, a thin, haunted music that played as it had played through the uncounted years of time. Nobody moved. The moons held and froze them. The wind beat slowly around them.
Hey! Hey, you people in the city!
Biggs.
I just want to make a little noise. What kind of a celebration is this, anyway?
Come on.
They built this city thousands of years ago. And now where are they? How do they die?
Who cares? They're dead. That's good enough for me.
Lord Byron.
What?
Lord Byron, a 19th century poet. He wrote a poem that fits this city. Might have been written by the last Martian poet. So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, though the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath and the soul outwears its breast.
and the heart must pause to breathe, and love itself must rest. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
Without a word, the Earthmen stood in the center of the city. It was a clear night. There was not a sound except the music of the wind. At their feet lay a tile court worked into the shapes of ancient animals and images. They stood there, silvered by the double moons beneath the crystal towers of Mars. And then Biggs was sick, and the sour stench of liquor filled the cool air. The men of Earth had come to Mars. And Spender turned and walked away into the city, alone in the moonlight, never once stopping to look back. It was a morning that might have been a Monday, or a Tuesday, or any day on Mars. Biggs was on the canal rim, his feet hung down in the cool water, soaking, while he took the sun in his face.
Hey, what are you doing back here, Biggs? Didn't you go out with the search party?
Yeah. I come back. I got a blister.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Look. Look, Cherokee, see that? Well, anyway, I had enough searching. 4 days hunting for that screwball Spender.
Didn't find him yet, huh?
Oh, good riddance. Oh, my feet. I'm going to soak them in the canal. If I was wilder, I wouldn't worry about that nut Spender. Let him go. He's a crackpot anyway.
Well, he's a little foggy upstairs, I guess. Hey, why don't you take your feet out of that canal, Biggs? I got to make coffee out of that water.
Coffee? You call that stuff coffee? I had a motorcycle once that dripped grease that tasted better than...
Hey, wait a minute, Biggs. Hey, look over there.
Where?
By that bush. There's someone there.
Hey.
It's him. Hey. Hey, Spender!
Spender?
He's coming over.
Why'd he stay lost, that crazy jerk?
Hi, Spender. Long time no see.
Hello, Cherokee. I've been exploring some ruins.
Oh, you and them ruins. You're like a dog in a boneyard. What's the matter? Why don't you just say something? Where you been?
Up in the hills. What would you say if I told you I found a Martian?
Oh, yeah?
Where?
Never mind. Let me ask you a question. How would you feel if you were a Martian and people came to your land and started to tear it up?
Well, I know how I'd feel. I've got Cherokee blood in me. My grandfather told me a lot of things about the way they kicked the Indians around in the Oklahoma Territory. If there's any Martian around, I'm all for him.
How about you, Biggs?
They're dead. They're all dead. It's a good thing, too.
Well, I found a Martian. Up in a dead town in the hills. I've been reading their books, and they're easy to understand. And I've learned their language. And then I found this Martian. And I brought him here, now.
I don't see no Martian.
I'm the last Martian.
What did you say?
Biggs, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, cut it out. What kind of a lousy joke is that? And I don't... Now, don't put that gun away. You're kidding, huh? All right, Spender, you're...
He's dead. You killed him.
You can come with me, Cherokee. You're an Indian. You know how the Martians would feel. You can be with me in this.
You killed him. You just killed him.
He deserved it.
You're crazy.
Maybe I am. But you can come with me.
Come with you for what? Go on, get out of here, you crazy murderer.
Of all of them, I thought you'd understand. I thought you'd remember what happened to your own people.
You get out of here, you crazy murdering...
Don't reach for that gun.
Spender. Spender.
Hathaway, break out the arms locker. Issue pistols, rifles, and grenades.
Yes, sir.
And you'd better get the Bible out of the navigation chest. We have to bury these two. Now, Park, will you start digging a grave? Hmm?
How about Spender?
We'll have to go up in the hills and find him.
Just let me at him with my bare hands, a crazy murdering louse.
That's enough, Park. Your man is sick. He must be...
Sick, my eye! He's...
That's enough! Now grab a shovel and start digging.
Spender saw the thin dust rising in the valley, and he knew the pursuit was beginning. The sun burned farther up the sky, and the blue sand drifted lazily across the sea bottom below. He sat beside a quiet pool 10,000 years old, and held a silver book. Through the house played the strange wind music of ancient Mars. And he heard voices whisper in his mind.
I hear you. I've always heard you. Even down there on Earth.
Run.
I won't run. What's the use?
Live, Earthman. Live.
What for? To see them tear down your temples and put up hot dog stands?
Run.
They've seen me now. They know I'm up here.
Live.
There's Wilder now. I've got him right in my sights.
Kill, Earthman.
Funny, he hasn't ordered them to use grenades. They could lob one right up here and blow me to bits. Yeah, maybe the captain thinks I'm too nice to be blown to bits. He wants my death to be clean. Just one bullet hole in me, nothing messy. And why? Because he understands me.
Kill.
The only one in the crew who ever did.
Kill.
Well, at least I can do the same for him. Just one bullet in his head, a nice clean death. All I have to do is pull the trigger and then... It's no use. I can't do it to him.
Spender! Can you hear me, Spender?
I hear you, Captain. What do you want?
Talk. Truth.
All right. Come on up. Leave your gun down there. Keep your hands up.
That's quite a climb. You mind if I sit down? How long do you think you can hold out?
Until you're all dead.
Now, why didn't you kill all of us this morning when you had the chance? You could have.
I know. I got sick. After I started killing people, I realized they were just fools and I shouldn't be killing them, but it was too late. So I came up here where I could get angry again.
Why did you do it?
When I was a kid, my folks took me to visit Mexico City. I'll always remember the way my father acted, loud and big. And my mother didn't like the people because she thought they didn't wash enough. I can see my mother and my father coming to Mars and acting the same way. Anything that's strange is no good to us. We aren't fit to take over this planet.
But to kill two men.
How would you feel if a Martian spit on the White House floor?
You know, you haven't acted very civilized yourself today.
I'll kill you all off, Wilder. That'll delay the next rocket 5 years, and then I'll kill them, too. And if I'm lucky, I'll live to be 60. And I'll meet every expedition that lands on Mars. Oh, I'll be very friendly. I'll explain our rocket blew up one day. And then I'll kill them off. I'll save Mars for half a century. And by then, maybe the Earth people will give up.
And yet you're outnumbered. We already have you surrounded. In an hour, you would be dead.
I found an underground passage that'll take me back in the hills, Wilder. I'll go back there. And then I'll pick you off one by one.
We'll see. Well, it's a nice town you've got here, Spender. It's beautiful. I'd like to live here.
You can. Join me. You're not like them. Why go back to them, Captain? I'll show you what a good life these people had.
No, there's too much Earth blood in me. I may even agree with you about all this. But that does not change what I must do.
You won't stay?
No. This is your last chance, Bender. Look, you're sick. Now come along with me quietly.
No. One last thing. If you win, do me a favor. Try to see that they don't tear this planet apart.
Right.
And if it helps, just think of me as a very crazy fellow who went berserk one summer day. Be easier on you that way.
I'll think that over. So long, Spender.
Bye, Captain. Good luck.
The men spread out again, walking and then running on the hot hillside places where there would be sudden cool grottos that smelled of moss and sudden open blasting places that smelled of sun or stone. The men ran and ducked and ran and squatted in the shadows.
I'll blow his brains!
Captain Wilder hugged the rock warmed by the sun. He gasped, for the air was thin and not meant for running. Spender lay at the top of the hill, and a gap in the rocks showed the white of his shirt against the shadows. Wilder looked at the towers of the little clean Martian village, like sharply carved chess pieces lying in the afternoon. He saw the rocks and the interval between where Spender's chest was revealed.
Go on, Spender, get out. You only got a few seconds to escape. Go on, get out of the caves. Come back later. You go now. I've got to win this. I've got to think that I'm right. Pull this trigger. Go now. Get out.
I'll get him! A slug in the head, I'll blow his bloody brain!
No, Parkhill! Put down that gun. I'll do this myself.
Spender. Why didn't you get out? Why? Why? Why?
They buried him in that ancient valley town, where the music of the wind played on through the days and the nights. They laid him in an ancient silver sarcophagus with waxes and wines which were 10,000 years old, his hands folded on his chest. The last they saw of him was his peaceful face in the cold silver light of the racing twin moons. The captain found the poem in Spender's pocket, and he read it before he shut the marble door.
So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, and the moon be still as bright. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon. Yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
The next afternoon, Parkhill did some target practice in one of the dead cities, shooting out the crystal windows and blowing the tops off the fragile towers. Captain Wilder caught Parkhill and nearly knocked his teeth out.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from September 22, 1955 on NBC. The story was first turned on the air on Dimension X, another NBC series, in September 1950. And that wraps it up for this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.